Chapter 5 Ted wears a suit like it's wearing him, so he looks sharp as hell when he picks Beard up for the Wichita Football Award ceremony. "Love the tailcoat," Ted exclaims when Beard slides into the passenger seat. "Looking good, Coach." "Thanks, Coach," Beard says, instead of grabbing Ted by the shirt collar and hauling him in. Ted's hair is swept up off his face in a perfect hold, and Beard wants to mess it up, wants to shove the jacket off Ted's shoulders and chase the scent of Ted's cologne to his throat. "Looking good yourself." "Well, thank you. We clean up well, don't we?" Ted starts the car. "All right, what's it gonna be, DJ Beardo?" Beard blocks out Ted's preference before it can tug at him. That's cheating. He picks Simple Minds. Ted beams. "How do you always pick something perfect, huh?" "You like everything," Beard answers with a smirk. "Not true," Ted cries in fake outrage. "Oh yeah? Give me 5 things you don't like," Beard prompts. "And it can't be something obvious like, I don't know, world hunger." Ted's chuckle is low and warm. 5 things? Easy peasy. He assumes a glower that he clearly thinks is required to dislike something. And it's a good thing Beard can't kiss him. Not while he's driving. And not ever. "Let's see now," Ted says, humming thoughtfully. "I don't like traffic." Beard eyes Ted skeptically. "Didn't you tell me once that traffic gives you a chance to reflect on the day ahead or the day behind?" Ted glances over, eyes shining with laughter. "Oh, I see how it is. You're gonna pick apart my answers." "Not if you give me 5 things you don't like," Beard says with a shrug. Ted affects his dislike glare again. "All right, 5 things I don't like. I dislike..." Beard tilts his head, smirking right as Ted looks over. "Just 5, Coach." "Aw, heck," Ted says dramatically, and he gives an actual pout. "Everything I'm thinking of, I can immediately find a reason it ain't so bad." Beard nods. "You like everything." Ted gives a full, hearty laugh, slapping the steering wheel in his enthusiasm. Beard reminds himself Ted is a happily married man with a toddler, that he's straight, and that he's way too good for Beard regardless. It's quiet for a bit, Simple Minds taking over for them. "And the lights that shine on. But if that don't mean nothing, like if someday it should fall through, you'll take me home where the magic's from and I'll be with you." "I'll think of 5 things. Just you wait," Ted says. "I'll give you $5 if you do," Beard replies. $1 for each thing. Ted grins. "I accept those terms." At the end of the night, Ted gives the closing speech. Once he's thanked all the players, handed out Most Improved Player, Ted doesn't believe in giving out MVP awards, and announced the captaincy for next season, Ted clears his throat and gives the full room of faculty members, parents, and college kids his brightest smile. "Folks," he says brightly, "thank you for another fantastic football season. I just know we're going to have a great one next year, full of clear skies, barbecue sauce, and touchdown celebrations. And I know that even if we hit a few roadblocks, it'll be a season to remember. I hope the summer brings you joy and none of those pesky things I dislike, such as missing a joke, wet socks, a video that's buffering, mosquitoes, then filling up on bread. Y'all have a great night now. Drive safe. Ted walks straight over, wearing his impeccably tailored suit and that absurdly attractive smile. It completes the dizzying picture. Ted is stunning, perfect, irresistible. Beard is genuinely amazed he doesn't kiss Ted while he hands over the money he owes. When he senses a little tug in his chest, pulling him closer, Beard knows it's got to be coming from himself. No way Ted wants that. Beard comes awake to a hand resting on his shoulder. He can tell it's morning. His alarm hasn't gone off, so not quite 7 o'clock. But more importantly, he's waking up beside Ted, who is himself sitting up in bed with his laptop in front of him. He can confirm that the birds outside Ted's window do appear to be affected by the spell. They're currently covering When Doves Cry. We get it. You're birds, he grumbles. Well, good morning. Ted looks down with that radiant smile before it settles into a smirk. Heck, you should have heard him doing Bob Marley earlier. Kind of nice with all those harmonies, though. Beard shifts up on his elbow to kiss Ted, now that he can. Ted hums into it in a way that makes Beard immediately interested in returning to last night's activities. Or, actually, exploring a few things they didn't get around to in all the frantic desperation. But there'll be time for that later. This is mutual, and the absolute assurance Beard feels about that is intoxicating. Impossible as it seemed even 12 hours ago, there isn't a trace of disbelief running through Beard's veins as he kisses Ted. He feels like he could burst into song any moment, and he probably will if he doesn't focus on something else. He wouldn't mind, but he's still waking up. His voice just isn't ready for God only knows or you make my dreams. You been up a while? Beard asks when they part, propping his head on one hand and holding Ted's knee with the other. Ted rubs at his eyes. Yeah, about an hour now. Trying to find a way to reverse this thing. Not having a whole lot of luck, unless you count this message board with some pretty wild stories. Ted chuckles wryly. Apparently, you can reverse a truth spell by stripping down under Halley's Comet, but she ain't paying another visit to Earth till 2061. At least it's not Hale-Bopp. That's apparently interesting enough for Ted to look up Hale-Bopp's expected return date. Holy smokes! Yeah, Beard says. He gets briefly distracted, running his hand along the muscle of Ted's thigh. The other reversal options aren't ideal either. We might need to figure out how to go forward without one. Ted grimaces. I don't know, Beard. Not sure I can continue coaching like this. Can't be running training sessions when the players are intermittently put off course needing to express their innermost feelings through song. Beard sits up. Here's the thing. Rebecca and Roy are in the loop. We can find a workaround until we figure out a more permanent solution. We've got all kinds of technology these days. We can set up a video feed on the pitch for training sessions, and you can coach from the office. And for matches? Well, we're on the sidelines anyway. We can test out the radius of the spell, figure out what distance you need to be from the players and the other staff. It's not perfect, but... All this wee business, Ted says, and he pulls Beard into a kiss that's equal parts sweet and sexy. Ted moves the laptop aside and leans down over Beard, his mouth dragging along Beard's jawline. Beard's cock stirs. He wants to feel Ted's facial hair on his throat, on his chest, and right on down. But they've got a plan to put in motion. Beard pats Ted's shoulder reluctantly. We should get a move on. Ted nods, swallowing audibly. You're right, Coach, he says, eyes dark and intent on Beard. Let's put that on the back burner for now. Let it simmer. Fuck. Beard closes his eyes. He's this close to abandoning everything and spending the whole day in this bed, making Ted's voice continue to sound just like that. We should get ready, Ted murmurs, mouth tracing a hot path to Beard's ear. Put on some clothes. Get coffee. Beard doesn't quite muffle his groan. That's low, Coach. Ted laughs. All right. Sorry for teasing. Beard brushes a hand along Ted's stomach at the line of the bedsheet, currently barring access to Ted's hardening cock. Who's teasing? Ted shivers and kisses Beard again, and it's like liquid sunshine. We could save time with a shared shower, Ted says with an eyebrow waggle. Beard has to agree with him on that one. And if they happen to share a couple other things while they're in there, well, that's just nice and convenient. Ted can't bring himself to feel too much dread when Beard leaves for the clubhouse ahead of him to inform the team about the situation. He's gonna give the players a warning to steer clear of their head coach if they want to keep their secrets inside of them. He's still anxious, but he finds he just can't get too worked up this morning about the spell or his siren magic when he's so darn happy. The players deserve to know the truth. Ted said he owed him honesty at the end of last season, so he can't be going back on that at the first hurdle. Ted has about an hour to mentally prepare for what will come once he arrives at Richmond. But, admittedly, he spends most of it pleased as punch about the new development with Beard. Back in college, Ted could never be sure how Beard felt about him. It sure was nice last night to discover that he wasn't the only one wishing their buddies would all cancel on movie night so it'd just be the two of them. Ted had a story to share about watching Beard make out with someone at a mixer, misidentifying the unpleasant feeling worming through him as loneliness. Beard had his own to share about watching Ted marry Michelle and feeling certain he'd lost his chance. It's nice to know they were both feeling the tug, that maybe it really was just a matter of the right timing. Ted hadn't made it all up in his head. Ted waits until Beard sent the all-clear text, and then it's time to face the literal music. There aren't as many people out and about since it's past the morning rush, but there are a few serenades sent his way. Ted thanks the strangers he meets and centers himself by thinking about last night. The hour or so of kissing before they were even ready to move beyond that joy. The way Beard asked Ted to use his siren magic to show Beard what he wanted. How he reassured Ted it was okay, that it was hot, getting that tug and giving in. How it amplified Beard's own pleasure center. The way the mood rocketed to dizzying heights, a couple decades of urgency and all that feeling spurring them on. On second thought, Ted probably shouldn't be thinking about this in public. When he arrives at the training center, the corridors seem to be mysteriously absent of people that might feel compelled. He'll have to thank Beard for that detail later. Rebecca's sitting at her desk, immaculately dressed as always. He stays in the hallway, knocking on the door jamb. "Hey, boss," he greets. "Ted!" She stands and immediately rounds her desk to approach. Ted backs up. "Oop, you're probably gonna start singing if you get any closer." He laughs nervously. "Just wanted to drop off your biscuits. Got 3 days worth here. Sorry for missing my delivery yesterday. I'll see if I can get a box of those truffles delivered to you later to make up for it. Can't go in person. Don't want to truffle anyone's feathers." He's rambling. Rebecca blinks at him a few times. Then her face breaks out in a wide smile. "No need to apologize, Ted. Please, come in." She seems to spot his hesitation and adds, "If I sing, so be it. I have a thank you to give." "A thank you?" He's so surprised he doesn't move to cross the threshold. Rebecca starts to close the distance. "I can feel a song building, and while I admit it is not ideal, that is only because I will not get it out of my head for at least a week, which has nothing to do with you being a siren." Rebecca smiles and sings, "And I want to thank you for giving me the best day of my life." Ted can feel the gratitude on a cellular level. He lets out a release of breath that takes a bit of the last day's fear with it. "Gosh," is all he can manage as a lump rises in his throat. He clears it. "Not sure what I did to deserve that, but boy, do I appreciate it." "For God's sake, come in then!" Ted chuckles in surprise. "Yes, ma'am." When they're seated across from each other, Rebecca smiles softly. "Thank you for allowing me to discover what I truly want. I don't know if I would have found the courage to face that truth without a push, so I'm tremendously grateful to you for inadvertently giving me that." Ted's fingers start to tremble, not with anxiety or fear, but overwhelming emotion. She can't possibly know what a gift it is to hear that he didn't hurt her, but helped. His eyes prickle with tears. But he can't say anything. Too verklempt. "The other day, as I sang," Rebecca tells him, meeting his watery gaze with one of her own, "I realized what I want more than anything is to be a mother. I'm taking the steps to do that now," and her voice breaks as she beams at him. "I'm so grateful to you." That hits Ted's soft underbelly. The sob of joy and gratitude is coming to the surface. Rebecca doesn't even have to sing it this time. He can feel it in his very soul. Let it go. Ted, let's go. Nate is driving, barely listening to the traffic report, when his heart starts to race in his chest. His senses become wonky. It's harder to concentrate on the road ahead, and it feels like his hearing is deadened by passing through a whistling tunnel. Trying to focus through the sensation seizing him, Nate pulls to the side of the road quickly and puts on his hazards. The image floats to him from somewhere. Ted breathing before the match against Man City because he was trying to avoid... Nate clenches his eyes shut against the truth starting to sink in. He's panicking. He copies what he saw Ted doing, taking in and releasing deep breaths. But it's so difficult. He can't seem to focus. It feels like something inside of him has taken over. It's also utterly terrifying to think what would have happened if he'd been on the freeway. He needs to calm down. He's expected at work. That doesn't help. The thought only makes the panic grip him tighter. Nate takes another deep breath and imagines himself in a calm place. There's an early morning breeze on his face. The smell of freshly cut grass. A calm, peaceful, solitary quiet. A breath before the tasks begin. Slowly, Nate can sense the control of his body returning. He spends a few minutes in that body, breathing, appreciating the way he feels in it. When he's ready, he continues the drive to West Ham. He heads straight to the pitch. There is a breeze, but the grass isn't freshly cut. He's not alone, either. West Ham's kit man, Tyler, is setting up for training. "Good morning, Tyler," Nate greets. Tyler freezes in the process of unzipping the duffel bag that encases the cones. He stands quickly. "Morning, sir. Didn't see you there. Sorry, I should have..." "No, it's all right," Nate says quickly, desperate to put a stop to Tyler's nervous stammering. "You were doing your job. Doing it well. Keep up the good work." Tyler stands a little taller, smiling. "Thank you, coach," he says, returning to his task. Nate watches Tyler place a cone on the grass, and he knows he shouldn't leave it at that. "Tyler, how long have you worked here?" he asks. Tyler starts with obvious surprise at being asked a question. God, has Nate really never done that? "Nathan, there you are." Nate turns to find Mr. Mannion sauntering over. His heart starts to race again, and his attention is pulled to Tyler, who hastily turns away, head down, posture begging for him not to be noticed. Mr. Mannion doesn't notice Tyler. He doesn't even look. Nate needs to focus. "Yes, Mr. Mannion?" He puts his hands behind his back, trying to stand tall. "Were you wanting to do the performance review this morning?" "Oh, I'd forgotten all about that," Mr. Mannion says, waving airily. "No time today, I'm afraid. Perhaps I could squeeze it in this afternoon, but we'll see. Are you nervous?" "No reason to be, is there?" "Not to worry. We'll fit it in sometime this week." An angry, embarrassed rush of blood goes to Nate's ears. He pictures his calm place, heart thumping, and asks, "Then, how can I help you?" "I wanted to see for myself how it's going for Saturday. Doing everything you can to clench that win, eh?" Rupert gives him a wide grin. "Yes," Nate says. He can't manage anything else. His stomach is roiling with anxiety, but frustration, too. "Have you given any thought to who will be starting?" Rupert asks. "I think we ought to bench Carmichael, don't you? He didn't score last match." Nate hesitates. Admittedly, Carmichael hadn't scored, but he'd come close three times. They talked about it, and Nate told Carmichael if he can just focus and put the superfluous out of his mind, he'll be amazing out there. They're working on his follow-through. Carmichael has been training hard, trying to internalize that it's just the pressure in those moments getting to him. He's already shown improvement in practice. I'd like to keep Carmichael where he is, Nate says, trying to keep the tremor out of his voice. He's been working hard, and I think it will hurt his confidence if I don't give him a good shot to show that on Saturday. I know he can do it. Rupert regards him with no trace of his earlier smile. My apologies, Coach. I should have been clearer. Carmichael won't be playing Saturday. Let's see if watching from the bench motivates him. Nate clenches his jaw, releases it. With all due respect, Mr. Mannion, I don't believe that will motivate him. Well, let's find out, Rupert says in an icy tone. Am I being clearer now? Nate knows that's as far as he can go. He's already well past the point he should have gone, especially with a performance review on the horizon. Yes, of course, Nate replies. Oh, I'm so glad you agree, Rupert says dryly. The players begin to file out, Nate and Rupert on either side of the line. If that's all, Nate says politely, I should really get to work. Of course, Rupert says, back to smiling. It doesn't convey any happiness. Rupert taps his chin in thought. You know, perhaps I will have time for your performance review today. The anger simmering in Nate's chest coils and twists until it's all that's left. No room for embarrassment or fear. The anger is so strong and forceful, Nate knows he is on the verge of lashing out. It's suddenly so clear. He's had it all twisted. Rupert doesn't care about him. He never has. Nate has unfinished business to attend to. Someone to hear out. Just a moment, Nate says, mind made up. I won't be available for the rest of the morning after this training session. I'll be back at 1 o'clock sharp this afternoon, though, and then I'll be available for the performance review. Rupert examines him. Not available? Yes, Nate confirms. My apologies. Please mark it down as personal time. But why aren't you available? Rupert asks. And now that Nate's looking for it, he can hear the impatience in his tone. He can see every bit of Rupert's desire for control, once opaque, now transparent. Oh, I'm still learning the systems. So sorry, Nate says. Not remotely sorry. I haven't taken a day off yet, you see. What are the procedures? Do I need to provide a reason for it? I have a meeting, Rupert says, instead of answering. I'll see you this afternoon, Nathan. Nathan refocuses attention on his team. He has drills to supervise and give feedback on. And then, once that's through, he has somewhere he needs to be. This isn't his calm place. Nate has made his choices, but maybe there's still room for him there, even if it's just to visit. Maybe he can rebuild some of the bridges he burned. Later, Nate will need to take a good look at his contract, find out what tasks he needs to demonstrate in order to earn a strong performance review. And what exactly is a fireable offense? Jamie pulls up beside Sam and mutters a quick, breathless, "How much longer, do you think?" Sam keeps his running pace as he looks to Roy before he responds. He really doesn't want more laps added on. Thankfully, Roy seems to be watching Isaac and Colin. "Looks like Roy's at a 7.
"Nah, mate, that's a 6.
Jamie nods over. "Didn't even call me the prince prick of all pricks." Sam snorts. "Another 10 minutes, maybe?" "I say at least 20, Jan says, pulling up on the other side of Jamie. "They are obviously keeping us busy while they meet with Coach Ted."
"Not now, Jan," Sam and Jamie say in unison.
"You want Roy to give us more laps for sitting around having a fucking chat?"
Jamie continues, attempting a decent impression of Roy. "Whatever the reason," Sam says. "I hope this ends soon. My calves are getting sore."
"Sore already? Buddy, what's going on with your cardio these days?"
Zero jokes as he catches up to them. Sam purposely runs into him, which is a mistake because Zero laughs. Now Roy's looking over.
"Oi, you lot," Roy shouts. "Get over here."
"Oh, fuck," Jamie says under his breath.
They all course correct to head that way.
"Sorry, Roy," Sam says.
It was his response to Zero that got them in trouble.
"What?" Roy grunts. "Why are you sorry?"
Sam blinks and exchanges a glance with Zero. Well, we weren't supposed to be talking."
"Never said that, did I?"
Sam racks his brain. Sure enough, Roy had told them to do some cardio until he told them to stop. Nothing about talking. Out of the corner of his mouth, Jamie says, "Definitely a 4. Sam hums his agreement, along with Zero and Jan.
"What the fuck are you talking about, Tart?"
Jamie freezes up, but Jan does what Jan does best. "It's our rating system for how grumpy you are, Coach Roy." Sam closes his eyes like that will take away the last few seconds. When he takes a peek, it's just in time to see Roy trying to hide a smile. Oh, he's a rare 3 today.
"Why did you call us over, Coach?" Sam asks curiously.
"I was calling everyone over," Roy says, right as Colin and Isaac lead half the group to their circle. "Training's done. You can hit the showers."
"Coast is clear," Jan says with a nod.
"Wouldn't say clear," Roy grunts. "But you won't run into Ted in the locker room now. And for fuck's sake, stay away from the office if you don't want to sing."
Isaac waits until they're in the tunnel and out of earshot.
"We're all fucking doing this, yeah?"
Sam nods aggressively with the rest of the team.
They are so doing this.
It takes a while for both of them to collect themselves after Rebecca's kind words, but eventually she stands with Ted to make the walk down to the office with him. "Now, I won't hear any protests," she says firmly. "There are a number of us who want to help and make sure you can still do this job. With accommodations, so to speak. All of us have accepted that we may need to sing. Please believe me when I tell you we all agree that it is worth it to sing a little song if it means we get to help. So, we have some planning ahead, don't we?" That almost sets Ted off again, but he gets a handle on it this time.
Beard's waiting for them at his desk. Ted shares a look with him, and Beard buries his face in his phone, a hint of a smile poking through. "I'll text Roy," he murmurs, and Ted can't possibly hold back his happy grin. When Roy walks in, jaw clenched tightly, Ted meets his eye and offers a hesitant smile. "Hey, Roy."
"Hey. Good to see you, fucking finally," Roy says.
Then he winces as music floods into the room.
"Fuck," Roy says.
And then he sings.
"It's you I like. It's not the things you wear. It's not the way you do your hair. But it's you I like."
Ted knows he's gaping and that it's rude, but, well, gosh. Ted bites his lip on a swell of emotion, cheeks hot, as Beard and Rebecca join Roy.
"The way you are right now, the way down deep inside you, not the things that hide you, not your toys. They're just beside you."
He looks even more like a goldfish once Higgins sidles into the office, beaming cheerfully and joining in immediately.
"But it's you I like. Every part of you. Your skin, your eyes, your feelings. Whether old or new. I hope that you'll remember, even when you're feeling blue."
Ted can hardly imagine what his face is doing now, with all of them sweetly and openly singing for him.
"That it's you I like. It's you yourself. It's you. It's you I like."
There are no words to speak. Somehow, they seem to understand, each of them wearing their own smile, each one a little different, but still for him. Ted swallows past the emotion and manages,
"Thank you. That was... I can't tell you how much I appreciate y'all."
"Now then," Rebecca says briskly, "let us talk about logistics going forward. Now that the players are aware of your situation," she smiles at Ted, "a next step would be to inform the rest of the staff. Coordinate entry and exit times for minimum interaction if anyone needs it," Beard says. Higgins writes that down.
"I love that idea," he says. "I can prepare an email with need-to-know information and let staff know of any changes to the schedule so they can make arrangements."
"D-wing entrance," Roy grunts. "Barely anyone uses it."
"Well, now," Ted says uneasily, "I wouldn't want everyone using some other entrance just 'cause of me."
"It would be for you," Rebecca tells him. "If ever you're not in the mood for a truth bomb," Beard explains. That doesn't ease him one bit.
"Wait a second," Ted says, tentative but determined. "I don't think we should avoid the obvious. Maybe we should consider replacement. This seems like a heap of fuss and chaos just to keep me on."
Roy swears. Higgins makes his choking sound. Rebecca shakes her head. And Beard crosses his arms with a knowing smile.
"Oh boy. Did you not hear what we fucking sang just now?" Roy demands.
"I don't think there is a single person in the building who would take well to a replacement," Higgins says with concern. "It would be a very sad day indeed."
Ted shoves his hands in his pockets.
"So what? You're all just gonna sing your hearts out every time you walk into this room?"
worth it, Beard says. Ted meets his eye briefly, trying to say a whole lot without words. Mostly how much Ted loves him, and also that he's not helping. If it's the price of admission to being in the room with you, we are willing to pay, Rebecca says. Archly, she adds, handsomely.
And I love to sing, Higgins says brightly. Personally, I like the idea of bringing my leisure activity into the workplace.
Fucking fuck, Roy shouts. Will you fucking stop martyring yourself? We're trying to tell you we fucking love you.
Ted gapes again, but at least he's not the only one.
But if you want to fucking leave, do it. We won't stop you.
Yes. Good point, Roy. Rebecca nods stiffly. We will do whatever it takes to keep you on, but if you want to leave, Ted, if that's what you would prefer,
your choice, Coach, Beard says. Overwhelmed and moved by their utter sincerity, Ted clears his throat again. He gives all of that a real good think.
If I'm gonna stay on, Ted says, it just don't feel right getting to hear all your truths without reciprocation. And I've had this song turning in my head all day. Feel like I should be adding my own ingredients to this truth stew we've got cooking up. Add a carrot of veracity, maybe a potato of candor. And you've got to have an authenticity onion in a stew.
Higgins lights up.
It sounds like you've really committed to beef honest.
Ted beams, which only grows as Beard cringes, followed quickly by one each from Roy and Rebecca.
And I think that's my cue, Ted says.
Jokes aside, there are just no good words here. Nothing he could possibly say to communicate everything he's feeling. Just saying stuff? That's not enough. There are no words to speak because he's gotta sing them.
Take a real close look and you'll see the scattered, scrambled pieces of me. I've been trying to solve a puzzle made of grief. Throw out the sour notes and leave the sweet motif. But if I tear off my edges, then what does that leave? Is this all of me? No, I can't deny that they're mine. No, I can't be good all the time. But heaven knows I've tried.
It's difficult to face them, to meet their gazes head on and share the parts of him he's ashamed to hold within. But each person in the room is looking right back and giving space for him. For all of him. Their support bolsters him and carries him on like a current.
Ted's voice is ringing out, reaching through the glass to Nate where he's standing, on the outside looking in. There was no one at the front desk when he entered the facility, and he didn't pass a single person on his way in. He isn't supposed to be here. Ted might not want him to hear this. Perhaps he should leave. But he can't make his feet move. Ted's words are affecting. The truth, finally. But it's Ted's voice that tells Nate he really means it. That it's okay for Nate to be here,
that Ted wants him to be. He can sense somehow that Ted wants Nate to hear this. It is as if a tightly clenched fist is beginning to relax, palm exposed. Nate's heart is thumping, the song holding him still with curiosity. How can I have within me the man who they love, the coach, the monster, and the man who let you down? Oh, gather the pieces and look at the tangled mess I'm learning to invite around. Nate feels the tug inviting him into the room. For a moment, he resists, uncertain and scared to let go of the anger that's been fueling him. But the tug is warm and reassuring, and it tells him he will be safe, that whatever happens once he crosses the threshold, something wonderful will be waiting. If you're thinking that I'm wrong, then you win. I'll never feel right remembering what I did. But if you should ever think about turning around, this is all of me. The song reaches Nate's very soul. He can feel it. Ted does understand. The persistent, hopeful tug is outside of Nate, but it's also coming from within, expanding and making room for change. He gives in, joining Ted. 'Cause yeah, it might be all that you get. Yeah. I guess this might well be it. But heaven knows I've tried. And heaven knows I'll try. Ted takes Nate in, hardly daring to believe his eyes. He registers the other occupants of the room stepping out, giving Ted and Nate the room. Ted opens his mouth, but nothing comes out. He has nothing left to give. He has shared his truth, and he can only hope Nate has heard it. Nate breaks the weighty silence. I forgive you. Nate. Ted has to close his eyes as this kindness registers, as the emotions begin to cascade over him. When he opens them again, Nate is still there. And I'm so sorry, Nate says, for telling Trent about your panic attack. Nate exhales a slow breath. I wanted to hurt you the same way I was hurting. Nate chuckles sadly. It's a sour note I wish I didn't have in me. Eyes stinging, Ted smiles and says, I forgive you. Nate shakes his head, expression somber. I don't deserve it. Ted smiles as gently as possible. Then neither do I. Nate blinks, then laughs. I suppose that's fair. He steps forward, hand extended. I need to head back to my team. Ted shakes his hand. Of course. They're lucky to have you. I hope that will prove to be true, Nate says. There's no discernible self-deprecation in the words, but rather an awareness of what it takes to lead, that it's no small order. Ted has never been prouder. Looking forward to meeting you on the pitch next month, Coach. Yes, Nate says. He smirks teasingly. Don't think I'll go easy on you. Ted laughs. Wouldn't want anything less than your best. At that moment, there's a knock on the door. Sam is standing on the other side, Jamie and Isaac right behind him. Nate clears his throat. I should go. All right, Ted says. But if you ever need anything. Nate nods with a small smile. Thank you, Coach. Nate takes his leave, using the door to his old office. There's another knock, and it appears Isaac is responsible this time. Ted hesitates. He doesn't want the boys bursting into truthful song. In his indecision, Jamie steps forward and opens the door. Coach, sorry to interrupt. No, you're not, Sam sighs. Will you step out here, please? Jamie continues, as if Sam hadn't said a thing. Yeah, come on, Coach, Isaac calls, like he's pepping up the team. If it's not too much trouble, Sam adds. Ted tentatively walks through the doorway. In the locker room, his co-workers are looking on with mingled expressions of fond exasperation and curiosity. The players are arranged in three rows. Sam, Jamie, and Isaac take their places at the front in the middle, and, with no accompanying music or coordination, the whole team begins to sing and dance. You just gotta ignite the light and let it shine. Just own the night like the 4th of July. 'Cause baby, you're a firework. Come on, show 'em what you're worth. Make 'em go. It occurs to the players at different moments that there's no music. Consequently, most of the players have already stopped, but Danny is still happily belting, "As you shoot across the sky." Ted's catching flies. "Hey, why is it not working?" Colin complains. "Thought we'd sound good." "We sounded like drunk people," Jan notes. "How do we make the magic singing work, Coach?" Isaac demands. "Did we do it wrong?" "Maybe we should go out and come back in, yeah?" Jamie suggests. Cautious excitement starts to spread. Ted looks around at Rebecca, Roy, Higgins, and Beard. "Do any of y'all feel like you're compelled to sing?" They each display a look of concentration, and before long, they all shake their heads. Roy gives an impressed grunt. Higgins raises his arms in excitement, and Rebecca smiles. Finally, Ted looks to Beard for confirmation. "The spell's broken?" Beard nods and gives a thumbs up. He doesn't have time to consider what exactly happened to break the spell, because he's immediately distracted by how upset the players look by this information. Sam's heartbroken expression is a bit like taking a rough tackle. "It's broken?" Sam asks. "But we wanted to sing for you, Coach." Well, I'm afraid so, yeah," Ted says, taking in the entire team's crestfallen expressions. "I'm sorry, fellas," he adds, trying not to smile. "I appreciate y'all wanting to sing for me. Really means a lot. I'm sure it would have been..." The intro to the song starts playing and cuts Ted off, this time coming out of an actual speaker instead of thin air. Everyone looks around.
Beards got his phone out, apparently connected to the locker room's Bluetooth speaker. He gestures with the phone, watching the players expectantly. Beard to the rescue! The players light up and launch into an extremely chaotic, enthusiastic rendition of Katy Perry's Firework, every second of which is pure, unadulterated joy. Ted bops away, grinning so hard he's sure his face will hold its shape for days. When the players have finished and celebrated, they file out. Roy gives Ted a nod, and Higgins comes over for a high five, which Ted meets with a flourish. Rebecca smiles again and takes a step closer, then hesitates. Something tells him she wants to share a hug, but isn't sure she's invited to. A hug? That's a thing he definitely wants. He sends a gentle breeze her way, an inviting little tug, and lets himself trust that Rebecca can choose for herself. Rebecca looks at him with surprise, then smiles in relief. They meet in the middle, pressing happiness and care into each other. Then it's just him and Beard. "Wow," Ted says, all breath. "What a turn of events, huh? What do you think finally broke the spell? Must have been the conversation with Nate." "There was a reversal option we haven't talked about yet," Beard says, brows furrowed in concentration. "Or a reversal option that didn't require a pretty much impossible task, like tracking down a unicorn." "Yeah, that would have been a toughie," Ted agrees with an exaggerated grimace. Beard nods. "Can't find those in Europe." "Huh. That's a tangent he'll ask more about later, at the risk of never getting off it again. So, how'd we reverse it?" "You needed to share your truth with him," Beard says softly, "and he needed to accept it. And those were two variables no one could orchestrate. Can't manufacture that." "No kidding," Ted says in awe. "Well, that's pretty darn cool. But forget about the stupid spell. I'm just glad Nate and I made inroads." Beard doesn't answer, except to lead Ted by the hand to, Ted quickly discovers, the boot room. Beard looks around, probably making sure Will has left for the day, and then he backs Ted into a corner. Ted's heart starts to race. "Really don't know what I'd do without you as my co-pilot," he says. "DJ Beardo, always ready to swoop in and save the day. Sure do appreciate." He trails off into a hum as Beard kisses him. "What do you appreciate?" Beard asks as he untucks Ted's shirt from his track pants and puts warm hands on Ted's skin. "Everything," Ted murmurs distractedly. Beard chuckles and kisses Ted again. Ted strokes a thumb along the column of Beard's throat, a bottomless love for Beard settling right down in his very marrow. Come to think of it, appreciation for everything feels accurate and encompassing of the enlightenment that's occurred over the last few days. Maybe there's room for Ted to appreciate all the pieces of himself, even and especially the ones he's ashamed of, to make space for them. This is who he is, warts and all. He can't paper over his mistakes. He can only learn from them and try to do better going forward. His siren magic is a part of him, but it doesn't have to define him or his choices. He can trust himself. He might make mistakes, but there are people in his corner willing to hold him close and hold him accountable. Besides, it's not a one-way street. When Ted thinks about it, the people in his life,
past and present, they have their own magic, their own gifts to share. Ted tugs Beard closer with his hands. He's ready to make some beautiful music. End of Act Two. Curtain call.
Close your eyes. Have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on the run. And your daddy's here. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy.
Henry Lasso is 10 when his dad puts a tray of Bryant's barbecue sandwiches on the table and starts ripping his napkin into tiny pieces. Dig in, bud. His dad is using the voice he uses when he's nervous. Like every time he sat Henry down for a serious conversation. Is this going to be part 47 of the talk? Henry asks, squinting. His dad laughs. Well, not that talk, unless you got questions. But a talk. His dad shakes his head. Gosh, am I that easy to read? Henry shrugs. I don't know. You're doing the napkin thing. Good eye, Stephen Fry. His dad laughs again, rolls the napkin up, and pulls his plate closer. My dad used to do the same thing. Napkins, receipts, empty sugar packets, those thick cardboard coasters. Anything he got his hands on, it was getting ripped up. Henry swallows his bite of barbecue. Beard told me you ripped up your Jayhawks playoff ticket one time, but they let you in anyway. His dad smiles and shakes his head. Beard loves to spin a tale. I had all the pieces in my hand. Wasn't like they let me in without a ticket. He clears his throat. Heck, I'm stalling here. Not just today, but for a while now. I've been trying to spare you a bunch of worry and stress, and I don't know if that was the best idea. His dad leans forward on his elbows. Hey, bud, have you ever noticed things you want just seem to happen? Like, if you think real hard about someone giving you the last hot dog, seems like it just works. Yep, Henry puts his sandwich down. Never tried it for hot dogs, but I did get the last brownie at Jenna's birthday. His father looks serious. Henry can tell, all of a sudden, that this is important. What, Dad? Henry, his father says, the men in our family are born with a gift. My dad had it too. We're called sirens. Sirens? Henry asks. Like, on an ambulance? Not that kind of siren, kiddo. We have magic. Henry frowns. He knows magic is just a trick his dad and other people can do. Magic doesn't exist, Dad. I know that. His dad smiles. Well, it does exist, but not everyone knows about it. That thing you did with the last brownie, that's magic. You use the gift you have to suggest it. You mean I really did make Jenna's mom give me the last brownie? Not exactly, his dad says.
You made a suggestion, and she decided to go along with it. She decided that you could have the last brownie. But even though you didn't force her to do that, it's still a good idea to be careful not to take advantage. Take advantage? His dad nods. Yeah. If we use our gift to suggest people give us something, is that a nice thing to do? Henry thinks about that. I guess I can try to suggest someone else gets the last brownie. You could do that, his dad says, smiling. Or maybe you can use your magic to suggest that other people are included. Maybe there's a kid in your class who doesn't get invited to play at recess very much. Jacob, Henry says as the image pops into his mind. Sometimes he plays with other kids, but sometimes he's alone. I could suggest we invite him too. There you go, his dad says. That would be real fair and kind, Henry. I like that idea. And don't forget, you can do that without using your magic, huh? Invite people to play with you? Yeah, Henry says. I can do that. He wants to ask a bunch of questions, but there are so many they get all jumbled up. So, you can do it too? Get someone to give you the last brownie? His dad is back to tearing his napkin. Sometimes, if I'm not careful, I can do it by accident. But I try not to use my gift to get stuff for myself. His dad stops ripping his napkin and reaches across the table to pat Henry's hand. And it's important to know when to step up and when to step back. Maybe it's not up to us to decide who gets the last brownie. So, I try to remember that sometimes the best thing I can do is make sure that whoever made the brownies gets to decide who can have the last one. The truth is, his dad continues, everyone has gifts. And a big part of life is figuring out how to use your gifts to take care of the people around you. This is one of our gifts. You can use it to make the world more safe and more fun and more fair. Kind of like how you can bake a mean chocolate chip cookie. Your mom's favorite, right? His dad takes a deep breath and lets it out. And Henry finds himself matching it automatically. But we gotta pay attention to what we're doing, bud. Because everything we do affects somebody else. Just start noticing, his dad says. Try to notice when you've done something that makes someone happy. And when you notice you've done something that hurts, make a note to do it differently next time. Once you start knowing what to pay attention to, the world will show you the rest. That's a lot to take in, and you don't have to solve it all now. But I just want you to be aware of your gifts and use them well. His dad picks up his sandwich and takes a big bite. Sorry, I've been talking so long, big guy. The food's getting cold. Henry shrugs and smiles. That's okay. Just means I still have more left. His dad smiles, and Henry can feel a warm tug spreading through him. It feels like love, in the same way barbecue sauce tastes like love.
Out on the ocean, sailing away, I can hardly wait to see you come of age. But I guess we'll both just have to be patient, 'cause it's a long way. ago. A hard road to hoe. Yes, it's a long way to go, but in the meantime, before you cross the street, take my hand. Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Before you go to sleep, say a little prayer. Every day, in every way, it's getting better and better. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Darling, 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 darling boy.
The end.